Welcome back to The Roundtable. I'm Ian Pickus. A lot has changed for our guest Vanessa Carlton since we spoke last in 2011 on the occasion of the release of her album Rabbits on the Run. The singer-songwriter moved to Nashville and married a fellow musician, then became a mother. This fall has been a busy one career-wise, though. Carlton's back on the road with an extensive tour promoting her new album Liberman. It's the fifth full-length album for the Grammy nominee, who burst onto the charts in 2002. On your knees, planting seeds, the dirt making roads where the devil don't see. Love, I agree, so lucky to find you. Our memories, they don't stay behind us. Our minds are strong. Could it be enough to bring strength to the bones? Carlton will be in our region December 3rd at Troy Savings Bank Music Hall, and December 4th at Iron Horse Music Hall in Northampton. The December 3rd concert marks her Troy Savings Bank Music Hall debut and is a benefit for the Capital Region Coalition to End Homelessness. Vanessa Carlton, welcome back to the Roundtable.
Thank you. Happy to be here.
How's the tour going so far?
It's going pretty well. We're 3 weeks in. We have a good kind of rhythm going now.
Do you like bringing new songs to an audience, or is it somewhat scary?
Yes. I mean, honestly, I think any musician you talk to, they'll tell you they want to play the new stuff. They love playing the new stuff the most, which is definitely the case here as well. We love playing Liberman stuff. The majority of the whole kind of middle meat, if the meat portion of the show, if you will, is all dedicated to the new record.
Tell us about the name of the record. It's named for your grandfather, who was an artist. Do I have that right?
Correct. Yeah, so he was... I didn't realize this until maybe 6 or 7 years ago, but my grandfather's real name was Liberman. I always thought he was Grandpa Lee. My mother's maiden name is Lee. My middle name is Lee. So on my mother's family side, I didn't even know that was not their real name. So my grandfather was a designer of women's shirts in the 50s. He had a showroom in New York. And the story goes that he changed the name from Liberman to Lee to have a less, quote-unquote, ethnic name. He thought his business would do a bit better. And as a funny tidbit or a fun fact about my grandfather, the myth or the lore is that, I guess it's not a myth, is that a Ralph Lipschitz was also coming up around the same time, and he was a tie salesman, and he really liked my grandfather's showroom, and he wanted to sell his ties there, and he went on to change his last name from Ralph Lipschitz to Ralph Lauren.
Of course.
Yeah. So my grandfather wasn't not much of a businessman in terms of wanting to keep that business going. He was really more of a painter, and though it was always a hobby, I think he basically devoted himself full-time to it starting in the 80s, maybe. I have one painting of his that hangs right in the eye line of my piano in New York, which is where I wrote a lot of the songs, kind of just staring at that painting. And it's really kind of psychedelic in terms of its colors. It's really swirly and beautiful, but it's also very traditional. It's just a painting of a woman. She's painted three different times kind of in a circle with herself. And long story short, I wanted to honor not just my family's real name and kind of bring that to light, but also honor the painting.
Just curious, how did you eventually find out? I mean, did you, go looking back through Ancestry.com, or was it a family thing that finally came out?
Yeah, no, my mom just told me. And, when I told her I was going to name the record Liberman and after her family, I think she was really surprised. And now she seems to be so into it. My grandmother's still alive, and she can't really comprehend much at the moment, but, I think that the overall consensus from my family, from my mother's side, is that they're happy.
Maybe I'm reading a little too much into this, but is there anything that resonates with you for the fact that, you've been able to do your art from a very young age, and your grandfather kind of had to do it, for a while, at least as a moonlighting thing?
Yeah, no, I think that I'm very lucky that from the beginning, my parents were so supportive of me being an artist, and my grandfather obviously didn't have that support. It was a different generation And whatever he did, it was artistic. But he's definitely one of those painters that, though it was like considered a hobby for a long time, it's like he could have been like a painter as his, you know, for real. Like, I mean, it's certainly difficult to support your family, but I believe he was one of those level painters.
Mm-hmm. Just curious, will you encourage your child to get into the arts?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. For sure. I mean, she'll be exposed to a lot of art. I mean, there's no way around it, especially music in our household.
Let me ask you a little bit about the sound of the album. You know, your songs are always interesting and lyrically interesting, but there's also a lot of atmosphere that plays in here. And I'm just kind of wondering how you approached locking down the sound of the album, not just the songs themselves, but what the sonic quality would be.
Yeah, I mean, that honestly was just as important to me as the songwriting for this particular project. Steve Osborne and I worked really hard to get the sonic palette, if you will, right. We had a couple stops and starts too. Like the first time I went out there to a studio, and he's in England, so it's a while. You know, we sat and just arranged stuff and, you know, put stuff together, and we were inching towards what we ended up with. But I remember it was like a week. We just sat and we just fiddled around with sounds and stuff, and it just wasn't quite right yet. And then when I went back a couple months later to really commence the beginning of the record, that's when we cracked the code, if you will, on the recipe for the sound of the record. And we spent a lot of time thinking about it, a lot of time working on it.
Feel it come on like a sudden hope, bursting through a wall of stone. It's beautiful as the sadness starts to quiet.
How did you know when you finally hit on the pay dirt?
Honestly, we just felt bliss. I mean, it's like, that's the only like thing that we had to answer to in terms of, you know, any sort of pressure was our internal like response to the music. Like, I think what was really special about this project was Steve and I are like very attuned to what makes us feel good in music, you know, and there's no sacrificing the sound for something else that's less important. So, yeah, if it hit our feelings of like, I guess, euphoria to a certain degree, and that lush beauty that would come out in the studio, we would know that we were, you know, we were doing the right thing, going down the right road.
Tell me about the song "A Matter of Time." I think you had it in the works for a couple of years. It's on the new album. That was really a standout for me just as a listener.
Yeah, I love that song. That was one of the more simple songs where it was just like basically the way we recorded the vocal and double tracked the guitar, and it was like it's all you needed. And of course the atmosphere, a lot of it comes from how he's recording the vocal and the reverb plate that he's using, which is basically the same one that they would use on like Dusty Springfield records in the late 60s. So that was a record. That was a Matter of Time was a song I wrote on the piano, and it was just kind of boring on the piano. It just needed something else. I don't think it worked with that tone. So my husband John was visiting me at the studio. This is in Box, England. His name is John McCauley. He's a musician as well.
And Deer Tick, of course. Yep.
Yeah, and he's such a great guitarist and really natural musician, just responds so in such a pure way to things. And so I just said, what would this sound like on guitar? And played him a song. He's like, can you just start playing it on guitar? And he started doing this really cool finger picking thing. And actually, I didn't realize how, you know, Steve is very British, you know, and he loved how American that was. It doesn't even occur to John or I that's American, you know, style. And so Steve loved it, and then we like double-tracked it. And so it's like this kind of call-and-answer finger pick. And then it was one of those special moments in the studio where I would sing the song, and John was playing at the same time, and we did it maybe maximum three times. And put it together based on that. I think we actually took one whole take. One entire take is used that's on the album.
Give her all your darkness, give her all your light. Love is like a carriage, there's no spirit in the night. Like a wishing well, we're all says it's only a matter of time before your heart is mine. If you've been searching, you've been looking the world over.
Was there ever any trepidation for you with working together, or did you always play music together?
John and I, yeah, we started out when we first met with the idea that we would write a song together. We met through my friend Patrick Callahan, well, our mutual friend Patrick Callahan, who's in My Morning Jacket, and we did end up really writing a song. I mean, I ended up singing a duet with John on the last Deer Tick record, which I liked very much. And then for my record, you know, the last song on the record is called Ascension, and it's this beautiful piano instrumental that I kind of sing, kind of stream of consciousness over. And that was actually that is a reflection of a real collaboration between John and I, because that's what happens when you live with a musician. You know, they're playing their little things that they're working on all the time around the house, and John was playing that on the piano, and I loved it, and it didn't seem like that was all it was. It wasn't turning into him singing over it or anything. So I just would sing over it, and then I asked him, I was like, could I use that piece of music to close this record, and I can sing my little part over it, and would you play it? And he was like, sure. So that's actually John playing and me singing at the end of the record.
Do I have this right that you two, when you got married, Stevie Nicks officiated?
Yeah, Stevie did.
Wow.
We didn't have a wedding, so we were going to visit with Stevie anyway. She's a close friend, and I mean, I asked her if she would do it. She seemed into it, and it was really perfect. We couldn't have asked for a more special, organic type ritual, you know, to get married, and it was really cool.
So there's a story behind how you were signed to put this album out, which is that you sent it without a name on it to the labels.
Yeah.
And why did you want to do that?
Because I didn't want any associations that people have with my name and my past. I just didn't want that to be in their brain at all when they were listening to the record.
Mm-hmm.
I think that the partner I was, you know, it was like partnership. You know, when you sign with a label now, it's really important that it's like a great relationship. And I wanted them to feel like, oh, maybe this is like this, almost like a new artist, you know, like approach it almost like it's like a new artist. I mean, it's very different from any work I've ever done in my past. I think 2011 Rabbits on the Run is definitely a premise, like, you know, a precursor to Liberman. But a lot of people don't know that record. So I just wanted people to connect with the music based on what they were hearing and not think have any associations with a name or anything like that.
Where do you think you'll be going next? I mean, are you working on new songs or something else?
No, I'm just, you know, I'm figuring out how to tour with a baby. I have a 10-month-old daughter, Sid, and you know, we take it day by day. She's back in Nashville with her dad now, but she started out on the road with us for 2 weeks. She did great, but you know, I sent her home so she can get some better rest. And so I'm figuring out. I'm a new mom trying to figure out how to make it all work at the same time. So I'm not really thinking any farther in advance than that. I mean, I'm so happy to have this record out, and the reception has been so lovely, and so I'm really enjoying the performances every night. And just other than that, just trying to keep you know, keep my family together, you know, not be away for too long. And we are totally making it work. It's been really cool, actually.
You know, you've been on the scene for so long now, it doesn't seem like it, but you've got fans who have been with you for 15 years and longer in some cases. Do you feel like a veteran now, like you've got it kind of figured out?
It's been nice, the audience that I have now. I mean, they've certainly followed me through the years. Like, this record, I don't think is much of a surprise to a lot of the people in my audience that have been coming to shows, particularly for the past 5 years. But people that don't have, you know, that haven't been at all aware of what I've been doing, I think it would be this record would be kind of a surprise to them. So, I mean, veteran, I guess I certainly know how to tour a bit better. I take care of myself better on the road. And, you know, I think I know my limits a bit better in terms of, you know, just in terms of my energy, in terms of how much I can actually do without starting to feel like I'm compromised. So in that sense, I mean, most, I guess, quote unquote, veterans know their limits. I don't know. I guess I'm not that old, but I am at the same time.
Well, Vanessa Carlton is back in our region December 3rd at Troy Savings Bank Music Hall, which is a benefit concert for the Capital Region Coalition to End Homelessness, and the next night at Iron Horse Music Hall in Northampton, touring behind her new record, Liberman. And it's just always such a pleasure to have you on the show, and we're very excited to have you in town. Thank you so much.
Oh, thank you, love.
And you're listening to The Roundtable on WAMC.